Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
You're listening to Act of Will, an Anderson Dexter novel by M. Darusha-Wayme, read by the author. For more information, visit darusha.ca/actofwill. That's darusha.ca/actofwill. Chapter 10. Hazel Raymer was sure that over the course of her life, she had tried pretty much every neurostimulant that was legal, and a good number that weren't. Some of them were better than others, and of course used different things for different reasons. She was particularly fond of a couple of combinations. She liked to be able to feel different emotions and sensations at once. But those she only did online. The implants she and everyone else used to access EverywhereNet had built-in safeguards, so there was no way she could hurt herself with anything she did online, not permanently anyway. And if she was physically safe in her apartment, it didn't really matter if she had a bad reaction. She had her system set to automatically log her off if things got out of control, and once she was disconnected, she'd be fine. It had been a long time since it had come to that. She wasn't one of those poor people you see in doorways and alleys, in those terrible dive bars in the bad parts of the city. She believed that if the chemicals exist to help you feel the way you want to feel, it's just plain stupidity not to take advantage of them. She thought that it would be like refusing to talk to people online and only ever meeting face to face. Pointless. These things all existed to make life better, so there was no reason not to use them. She was thinking about that as she walked home from the train stop. She was remembering her conversation with Dex, his strange refusal to do those little things that made life bearable. He'd always been that way. What was it, he said, that he preferred to suffer? She wondered how true that was. He'd always had the air of a man with a past, some kind of dark secret, but Hazel always guessed that it was just an act to keep people from trying to get close. He seemed different now, though. Still suffering, but maybe finally learning to enjoy the pain? Just as those thoughts crossed her mind, she felt a pain of her own. A hand was clapped over her mouth and nose, and she felt her left arm being twisted behind her. She tried to scream, but the hand over her face muffled her cries. She felt herself being pulled backward, but she could only limply struggle. She couldn't breathe. She saw a flash of metal under her eyes. There was something in the hand that was over her face, something digging into her cheek. She felt herself begin to panic, when the hand twitched, and a jolt of pain shot through her cheek. But as soon as it began, it was over, and Hazel felt better. No, she didn't feel better. Hazel felt great. Where her arm was pinned behind her, the nerves all sang. It was like where there had been pain, there was now a pleasurable tingling. Very pleasurable tingling indeed. The hand over her mouth felt like a caress, and only its presence stopped her from moaning with pleasure. Even her lungs, starved of air, felt wonderful, like they were snuggled under a warm blanket. Hazel felt herself being stuffed in a box, the cramped quarters cozy as a womb. She felt the box moving. Maybe it was a trailer on a scooter, she thought. She never wondered where she was being taken. The trip itself was so wonderful. Every bump and jostle made her muscles tense and contract, the sexual feeling overwhelming. Finally, the box stopped moving, and Hazel saw it open. A man she didn't recognize stood over her, smiling. She smiled back and let him help her out of the box. They were in a small, dirty room, with nothing but a plain metal chair. "Sit," he said, his voice nuzzling her ears. She would do anything for a voice like that, she thought, and sat in the chair. She saw him take a length of polymer rope out of one of his pockets and grinned. He was going to tie her up. Just thinking about it made her feel wet between her legs. She couldn't stop herself from uttering small gasps as she let him bind her to the chair. "Does that feel good?" he asked in that beautiful voice, once she was trussed to the chair. Her arms were pinned behind the chair back, her hands together. She could barely move. The sensation was exquisite. "Yes," she whispered. He smiled and took a gleaming knife from a small sheath on his hip. He held it loosely in front of him, at about Hazel's eye level. She was mesmerized by the way the undulating metal of its blade caught the little light in the room. "That's good," he said as he cut away the material of her shirt. Hazel cried out in pleasure as he slipped the knife under the skin of her chest, between her breasts. He was pulling now, tiny drops of blood spattering his face. Hazel had never felt joy like this before. "That's good," he repeated, his voice like velvet on her skin. "I want to make you feel the way I feel." Chapter 11. Dex couldn't find anything about Hazel Raymer. He'd checked B&B's internal board when he'd first gotten in, but there was nothing new. There wasn't even a mention. It was as if nothing had happened. Dex frowned. He knew that B&B's security would be looking into it. There was the apartment to deal with at a minimum, and if she'd had some kind of accident, then showed up a few days later to find someone else in her apartment and her job up for grabs, it would be a nightmare of paperwork for her compensation and benefits advisor. Dex guessed it wouldn't look too good to new hires either. But if they were investigating, they were doing it quietly. He connected to the cubicle men's system and sent a request to have B&B's security log sent to him. The organization had a staff of many people whose talents were more like Annabelle's than Dex's. One of the reasons why the organizations encouraged its members to take on low to mid-level jobs with the firms was to get access to their internal systems. Over the years, clever crackers had tapped into the security systems for all the major firms. It wasn't always on. In order to keep their own access a secret, the organization had to access each system discreetly. Dex had the rank and access to get his own employer's security files. It just wouldn't be immediate. He figured that he would know whatever the B&B security people knew by the time he got home. Or maybe more. Dex guessed that security would be assuming that Hazel had just taken off or maybe had some kind of misadventure. He hoped that's all it was, but honestly, he doubted it was either. Hazel had never struck Dex as the impulsive type, at least not with her livelihood. And he knew she was smart enough to hit a med clinic if something happened, even if she were high when it did. So long as you're getting your quota of widgets out, corporate couldn't give a shit about what you do. And the firm's med clinic is on retainer, so it's not like they are shelling out any cash to fix up your bangs and bruises. So Dex figured that there was a good chance that security was just chasing empty leads. And he had an idea about something he could check that they couldn't. It was mid-afternoon, Dex's own personal witching hour. Nothing was worse than an almost but not quite finished workday. He got up from his desk, scowled at Mr. Mouse, and walked the few meters to the break room. He poured a coffee and thought about Hazel. He liked her, always had, and hoped that she liked him too. If she was okay, and he was just being paranoid, what he was about to do could really piss her off. It seemed like a worthwhile gamble. Back at his desk, Dex pulled up a client file and started the manual upgrade the client had ordered. While he worked, he used his private access to call Annabelle. "In the afternoon slump, are you?" she asked. "Am I that predictable?" Dex asked, turning to the wall and sub-vocalizing so that the prying Mr. Mouse didn't have anything to add to the file Dex imagined he kept on him. "I'm afraid so," Annabelle said. "So, have you sorted out that thing that was bothering you last night?" Annabelle kept her voice light, but Dex knew she was concerned. It had doubtlessly taken all her willpower not to call him before he reached out to her. "No," he said simply. "And that's why I called. See, it's not just the 2 p.m. blues." "What's up?" Annabelle asked, and Dex told her briefly about Hazel's disappearance. He expected Annabelle to tell him that he was jumping the gun, that a woman he barely knew could be expected to do just about anything, and taking off for a few days was not that unusual anyway. He expected her to remind him that the organization's resources were not for his own personal use, and that her particular and highly illegal talents weren't his for the taking whenever he felt like it. But she didn't say anything like that. She said, "What can I do to help?" Dex could have kissed her. "I want you to look for Hazel," he said. "You know, the kind of invasive, immoral cracker way you have." Annabelle had discovered a way to crack into the Everywhere Net's logs of individual access systems. The public net that everyone used for business, finance, entertainment, and more was essentially a public utility run by a cartel of the firms. Almost everyone accessed the system through neural implants, which interfaced with personal systems, those internal nodes which held audio and video memories, or enhanced cogitation or sensation. And those personal systems were of necessity chock-full of identifying information. The Everywhere Net kept logs of everyone's activities, both online and offline. Hardly anyone ever looked at those files, and they were automatically purged within a few days of creation. They existed, mostly, for cases just like this one, but it took a long time for even a large firm's security to get access to the information. Hazel had already been gone a couple of days. If Barrett and Barr's security didn't have the information already, it would probably be gone in a day. Getting Everywhere Net's logs for Hazel wasn't the part that Dex worried about, and Annabelle agreed readily to check them out. It was his next request that was more of an issue. "So, Annabelle," Dex began, "if you can get into Everywhere Net's logs, you must be able to trace Hazel once you're in there. You know, tunnel into her own personal system or something, right?" "Whoa, Dex," Annabelle said. "That's a serious invasion of privacy. I mean, if you'd just decided to say fuck it all or we're off on a bender or something, how would you like it to get a knock in your head and have some stranger barge in on your mind? I mean, most people don't even know that that sort of thing can happen. I can't imagine what that would be like." "I know it's kind of an extreme idea," Dex said, backpedaling a little. "I just wondered if you could do it. If, you know, it seemed like it was the only way." Annabelle was quiet for a moment, and Dex wondered if she was thinking of a way to tell him how appalled she was at him for even suggesting such a thing. Privacy was very important to Annabelle, Dex knew, and he was afraid that he'd made a terrible mistake in asking her this. He was trying to figure out a way to get out of this situation when he heard her take a deep breath. "I can do it," she said carefully, "but just because it's possible does not mean that I should do it." "Fair enough," Dex said. "It's probably overkill here anyway. I just feel like my hands are tied, like there's nothing I can do. And while I can't explain it in any way that makes any real sense, I just have a terrible feeling about this. If she's in trouble, and I really think she is, if there's any way to help her, I want to do it." "I understand, Dex," Annabelle said, and Dex knew that she meant it. "If we find anything more concrete, maybe it is something we could try. Maybe. I'd have to be pretty sure that it was the only way, but I'm not ruling it out completely. I'm just not willing to do it now." Dex let out a breath he didn't realize he'd been holding. "I'm sure that's the right decision," he said. "You'll get the other stuff for me, though?" he asked. "Of course," Annabelle said, the lightness back in her voice. "I know I have to earn my keep." Dex laughed. "You earn your keep plenty, kiddo, and it's not by doing anything fancy with cracking into systems, let me tell you." "You old sweet talker, you," Annabelle said. "Now go back to pretending to work, so I can get back to really working. Some of us have things to do in a day, you know," she chided Dex good-naturedly. "You know, I could help you with that," he answered, and ended the call. It was less than an hour later, almost the end of his day, when Dex's messenger chirped. It was his boss, Marion, wanting a chat. Dex closed his eyes and sighed. He needed this kind of distraction like a hole in the head. He hadn't spoken with his boss since he'd been put on a kind of employment probation, three-quarters time and pay. It had actually worked out great for him, since he kept his apartment and the other benefits, and got a shorter workday out of it. But he also knew that it was a last-chance kind of thing. One more fuck-up and he was out. He thought about it for a moment. He had no love of his job in B&B. He had some seniority and enjoyed a slightly better apartment for it, but otherwise, what he did day in, day out, would be no different at some other firm. Maybe it was time to move on. Getting canned could actually help him out. They would have to give him severance, which he wouldn't get if he quit, so he'd have at least a couple of weeks before he'd have to find another job, or at least somewhere else to live. Having decided that he couldn't be bothered to try and keep his job, Dex answered Marion's ping. He heard his boss's voice clearly in his ear, and idly wondered if they gave new management training in how to sound like a dick. Anderson, Marion began, and Dex sighed inwardly. I've been looking at your personnel record as part of a periodic review. So this was it, Dex thought. He said nothing and could almost hear Marion's discomfort. Dex smiled to himself. Yes, well, his boss said, unable to bear the silence. I've been reviewing your file, and I've noticed that you've been back on track. No more tardiness, following all the scripts on your calls. Very good, Anderson. I'm pleased to see that you are back on the team. Dex still had nothing to say, but he had to make sure his boss knew that he was still there. Glad to hear it, he said. Unfortunately, Marion's voice became cooler, we are not yet able to reinstate your full-time status. Dex grinned to himself as Marion took on a conspiratorial tone. I might be able to move forward on that a bit faster if you were to participate in a new program we've instituted. Purely voluntary, of course. Dex rolled his eyes. I'm listening, he said. Marion explained that even with all the monitoring available to them, electronic timestamps, all calls and communications on the system copied and monitored, there were still some things that only the people on the ground could know. You know, Marion explained. Attitude, team spirit, that sort of thing. We just want you to give us your impressions of your coworkers, so we can all know you a bit better. You want me to spy on my neighbors? Dex asked, almost incredulous, but somewhat unsurprised. Just if you noticed anything that might be relevant, Marion assured him. It would be a great help to us here, and would be duly noted on your record. Dex contemplated telling his boss what he thought of this scheme, but decided he wasn't quite ready to be fired after all. I'll see what I can do, he said, and ended the call. He sighed and glanced up at Mr. Mouse. The other man avoided his gaze, and Dex wondered if the other man was in on the scheme or just wanted to be. You deserve each other, he muttered under his breath, then logged out of his B&B account. Dex was already back in his apartment, out of his uniform and into the hideous but comfortable one-piece, when Annabelle pinged him. He settled into his comfortable chair and put his feet up on the edge of his table. So is this a social call, or do you have news from our great mechanical overlords for me? It's about Hazel, Annabelle said, her voice serious. Dex's smile slid off his face, and he felt the muscles in his neck and shoulders tighten. What? He croaked out. She's dead, Annabelle said matter-of-factly. Dex felt the air leave his lungs like he was being deflated. You're sure? He asked, knowing that Annabelle would never have told him something like that, without being 100% sure. I'm sure, she said, her voice soft. Remember I told you how if someone is logged into the nets when they die, there's this specific data pattern that shows up on the logs? Dex nodded, which Annabelle couldn't have known since they were using a voice-only connection, but she continued anyway. Well, there's a very clear instance of it for her. For 2 nights ago, at 0307 UTC. I make that early evening your time? Jesus, Annabelle, Dex said. Somehow I thought it was too late, but I still hoped, you know, that she was just on a bad stim trip or, I don't know, lying in a ditch with a headache and no memory or something. God damn it, he exploded and slammed his fist into the arm of the chair. He said nothing for a moment, and Annabelle didn't interrupt his silence. Any idea what happened? Not yet, Annabelle said. But I'm trying to track her identity chip and see if I can figure out where she is. You mean where her body is? Dex said bitterly. Yes, Annabelle said quietly. They were both quiet for a while. I'm sorry, Dex said. I didn't mean to take it out on you. You didn't, Annabelle said. And I'm the one who's sorry. She was your friend. This must be very hard. She wasn't my friend, Dex said sadly. We sat next to each other at work for a couple of years and complained about the coffee every day. I didn't even know she used stims until the other day. I don't know where she lives or even who to notify about this. She was just another person I barely noticed on the edge of my life. And now she's gone, and that's all she'll ever be. Chapter 12. Annabelle and Dex talked for another hour. Mostly Annabelle listening to Dex alternately rage about Hazel's death and moan about how he'd hardly even gotten to know her. Annabelle said little, other than to remind Dex that what had happened to Hazel could not possibly be his fault. She promised that she would do what she could to track Hazel's movements in the hours before she died, following the signals in the chip embedded in Hazel's hand. Identity chips didn't broadcast unless they were in use, so you couldn't really track a person using them. However, Annabelle had found that a careful reading of their logs often painted a picture which could be used to recreate a particular period of time for a person. She was quite good at it, and it was one of the reasons why she was so well regarded among the cubicle men. After Annabelle extracted a promise from Dex that he would not go and do anything until the next day, she rang off to begin her search. Dex was torn. One part of him wanted to break his word and hit the streets, trying to find Hazel's body by breaking down every door in the city. The other part of him wanted to forget that Hazel was gone, forget that he would be unable to let this go. It wasn't his case, would probably never be his case, even if someone did come to the organization looking for a resolution. But he was stuck with it, he knew. He would never be able to just let it go. But maybe for a few hours on this night, he could forget. He walked to the cupboard, pulled down the bottle of Jamaica's Best. He poured a tumbler half full of the dark brown liquor and tossed it back, downing the drink in one swallow. He grimaced and refilled his glass, then pulled a bottle of ginger pop from the cooler. He splashed the soda into the glass, diluting the drink slightly. He took a sip, and walked back to the chair with the drink in his hand. He needed something to distract him, or he would spend the whole night trying to solve the case without any information. The rum was starting to burn his belly, and he felt the warmth spread throughout his body. The familiar feeling made his thoughts start to mellow, and he found himself accessing his video library. He recorded his life as a matter of course, but other than experiences relating to cases, he only kept the interesting parts. There were a great many of those, though, mostly from his youth as a musician. He picked one of those, a particularly smoking night in a terrible bar in the part of town where unemployed people tended to live. The bar was barely a functional room, its thin walls bleeding the sound of its bands out to the street where there were always people trying to sleep. The stage was nothing more than a small rise built of junk that the bar's owners had found in the alleys behind the building. Dex always wondered that the stage was going to break under the weight of himself and his three bandmates. The drinks were watered down and the food was non-existent. But Milo's New City Lounge consistently had the best audience of any of the venues Dex played. It had been his favorite place in the world. The video Dex chose was from one of the first gigs he played at Milo's, and before he even started the file playing, he remembered the combination of nerves, booze, and excitement. He started the video just before they'd gone on stage, and watched himself sitting in a chair at a table off stage that Milo's provided for the musicians. He saw himself drain the last of his beer, and slap the glass on the table across from Jenny, the mixer and synth player. "Let's get it on," he heard her say, and he saw her stand. The view shifted as he had stood himself, the recording taken from his own perspective. It wasn't exactly like being there, but the combination of memory and the video made watching the events almost seem like it was happening to him all over again. He walked behind Jenny, Maxime pulling up the rear, as they climbed onto the rickety stage. Jenny's small deck and keyboards were already set up, while Dex carried his mandolin, and Max had his guitar slung over his back on a strap. The crowd roared into life as they made their way to their places, the ovation huge even though Dex was sure that hardly anyone in the place had ever heard them play before. He remembered that the three of them had been playing weekly at their regular watering hole, JT's, and that they'd been invited to play a cancellation spot at Milo's when the owner had stopped in one Thursday. They didn't even have a name for the group. Dex watched as he, Max, and Jenny played to the smoky room, the video a little dark and grainy. It must have been before he'd gotten the upgrade, which compensated for poor lighting. Even so, the audio was crystal clear, and by the time they were into the third song, he wasn't even watching anymore. He was letting the music wash over him, the riffs of his mandolin merging with the twangs from Max's guitar, with the strange sonic waves that Jenny created sweeping over both their instruments. Dex found himself fingering the arms of his chair as he listened, between long, slow sips of his drink. At the back of his mind, Dex knew that he was in for an unpleasant morning if he kept this up, but at that moment, he just didn't care. He wanted the memories, the release from his present. He didn't want to think about his job at B&B, about Hazel, or even about Annabelle. He wanted to be lost in his past, back in a place where he maybe didn't have a lot of security, but he never felt out of place. With the video still running before his vision, he picked up the mandolin Annabelle had given him when he was visiting her. It was nothing like the one he was watching himself play in the video. That one had been an antique, made of real wood. He'd sold it when Max left. He wasn't going to play it alone, and it was just another reminder of a life he was trying to leave behind him. At least, that was what he'd thought at the time. Later, he regretted losing the instrument almost as much as he regretted everything else. He had told Annabelle about his old days as a musician, but he thought he'd always made it clear that those days were in his past, that he didn't miss playing. But when he was in Nice visiting her, she pulled out a large parcel on the day before he was going to leave. She had made a particular effort that night, Dex remembered. She had sprung for a takeout meal made from real ingredients, not the ubiquitous nutrient blocks that Dex, like most people, lived off. The dinner was strange to Dex, who was unaccustomed to even vat-grown or synthesized food. He didn't think Annabelle cared for it much either, but he knew it was the thought that mattered. She was trying. Trying to be with him in an embodied, physical way, even though she recoiled from the physical world as much as Dex did from the virtual one. After the bizarre dinner, she had sat near Dex on the small sofa in her apartment. Her place wasn't really that much bigger than the one Dex lived in, but it was worlds away in terms of its appointments. She had a separate bedroom, and the main room had a couch as well as a table and chairs. The furniture looked like it had actually been designed for human beings, and Annabelle told Dex that she'd been allowed to choose her own things from a catalog her personnel manager had gave her when she started her job. "So that's what it's like at the top," Dex had said, smiling. "I'm not at the top of anything," Annabelle had answered, chiding Dex but laughing. "I'm just a working stiff like you, only they pay me more." "Well, your top's in my books," Dex had said, waggling his eyebrows. Annabelle had rolled her eyes, but Dex could see that a slight flush had appeared at the edges of her cheek. He'd begun to recognize that this was a sign that she was flattered. He'd begun to really like seeing it. He wanted to reach out and touch her, but he knew from experience that it would ruin the mood. She would flinch and shrink from his hand, or worse, try to pretend that everything was fine while she suffered. He had stopped trying, hoping that one day she would come to him. He was starting to think that it would never happen, and he tried to imagine a way for him to be happy without it, without her touch. He wasn't sure it would ever work, but at times like these he was willing to try. She had shuffled a little on the couch and looked at him shyly through lowered eyelids. He often wondered how someone who so clearly disdained the physical world could be so good at communicating without words. "What?" he'd asked, unable to keep a curious grin from his face. "What are you up to?" "I've got a surprise for you," she'd said, and for a brief moment Dex's heart flipped and he thought she was going to touch him. But instead, she reached behind the couch and retrieved a large box, wrapped in some kind of thin film. She handed it to Dex, and he raised an eyebrow. "Just open it," she said, smiling shyly. "I hope you like it." When he first saw the mandolin in the box, Dex was shocked. He never thought he would play again. It had never even occurred to him to try. Music for him was locked in the past. But he couldn't help but pluck one of its strings, and the sound resonated in his chest like a thousand memories. Annabelle was looking at him, expectation and concern clear in her eyes. "Is it okay?" she asked, nervous all of a sudden. Dex's mind was churning, trying desperately to come up with strategies to hide from Annabelle what a terrible mistake the gift had been when he realized that he wasn't feeling the overwhelming sadness he associated with things that reminded him of those days. Amazed, he looked into her eyes and said honestly, "Yes, it is okay. Thank you." He had played the mandolin a few times since he'd returned to the city, but never like this. He played along with the video memory, the notes coming back slowly but steadily as he moved from song to song. He stopped every couple of songs to refill his glass, and as the level in the bottle dropped, he began playing with more feeling, more freedom. He played through the whole video, the full 3 hours that he'd played in Milo's so many years before. After the video was done, he played on his own until he could barely see the strings, let alone carry a tune. He left his glass on the arm of the chair and fell into the bed, still wearing his ugly one-piece. Thanks for listening to Act of Will. The theme music is The Binary Voice by Justin Bianco. Find more music by Justin Bianco at magnatune.com. For more information about Act of Will, visit the website at darusha.ca/actofwill. That's darusha.ca/actofwill.